Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B.
All right, I'm here with Matt Brown for part two of our interview. We only got three official questions done for part one. So I told you we'd have Matt back, and he's graciously been able to come back, and we're going to get this going. So Matt, first off, man, thanks for coming on again. I'm sure the listeners are going to love to hear what you got to say for round two. And
absolutely, man.
Yeah, man. Let's start off with our driver operator discussion.
Okay. You know, you and I, we've been kind of going back and forth the last couple of months. I've been noticing you've been moving up a lot more, posting a lot more of things you're doing with your rig, your time when you're driving, things like that. I've been blessed. We've had a couple of jobs in the last 2 months where we had move up drivers. We had younger drivers being first due. I actually, our last big fire we had, I was the driver on the truck that day. So I think one thing we kind of miss sometimes is getting our senior firefighters, getting our move up drivers in the mentality of what it takes to not just drive, but actually be the operator of that engine. So like, how's it been for you? Like, I'm going to ask you a question. Like, you know, what have you done, or what are things that you do to prep yourself when you're moving up and you know you're moving up for that day?
So I can tell you that my journey to driving was not quick, and I'm 100% fine with that. So when I first got into fire service, you know, I wanted to perfect my craft of being a firefighter. When I started as a volunteer, of course, you know, I was learning the ins and outs and all that good stuff. And then once I transitioned and I got on my career department, I was a firefighter for the first 15 years. I never promoted. So I wanted to get good at being a firefighter. I wanted to learn the job. But I will say I was on a volunteer department where after a few years, I was able to get checked off to drive. So I started driving for my volunteer department. So getting time behind the wheel, learning from, you know, the OGs, good mentors, good driver operators before me, I learned that, okay, driving is more than just getting behind the wheel, hitting the cue, sirens, going, you know, not blowing through red lights, but of course, you know, checking up at the light, making sure traffic's good and things of that nature. So with me, I got a lot of drive time through my volunteer department because once I moved out of my parents' house, I got a townhome right across the street from my volunteer fire department. So I was literally Johnny on the spot. If we got a call, once I was able to get checked off, I was pretty much numero uno driving, getting our engine, getting our tanker out, you know, vice versa. So I got a lot of drive time, a lot of experience doing that. So when it came time to, hey, all right, at my career department, hey, I want to go through the checkoff process. And my captains are like, all right, let's do this. So it was easy for me. It was a little nerve wracking because, all right, this is my main job here. Like, man, if I get a fire, I'm going to have to pump it. But with doing all that in a volunteer sense and transitioning to the career side, man, it was easy. But I will say what I am seeing now from current new people coming in is they have a year or two on, man. And then next thing you know, they want to get checked off to drive. And it's like, okay. But driving, like you said, is more than just getting behind the wheel. You got to know the sounds, the ins and outs, things of that nature. You know what I'm saying? Like the way I was taught, man, I was taught on trucks that had relief valves, true relief valves. Yep. We don't have that now in modern trucks anymore. So that skill it's a dying art, man. And unfortunately, we have guys that just want to run through the paces, get checked off, and they're just lever pullers is what I call them. They just, all right, set it and forget it, man. I'm good to go. And I'm just standing here at the pump panel. It's like, nah, bro, it's more than that.
Man, like, I think you hit it right there. You know, we have lever pullers. And I'd say they're not even that, man. Like, and I was that young kid. You know, I came in the fire service at 19. You know, everybody wants to drive big. That's why you get in. You see the guys driving. You want to be the driver, man. And anytime we would have the all calls, early on in my career. Like, it was haul ass to the station. Whoever gets there first, you didn't want to be the captain, so you wanted to get there second. But if you had a senior guy over you, you knew you as the younger guy, you were going to drive. So like always, that's all we wanted. And it wasn't until about a year into my career, I actually got moved to a shift, a station where I had a really good captain and a really good engineer who were very dialed in, very mechanically inclined. They both had serious mechanical backgrounds. And that's right when we started pushing these things, our task books out at Fry. So we developed a driver operator task book. You had to have that to be an acting engineer. So I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get my book done. Like, I have a mechanical background, I can drive, I'm good. And the first 3 days of me working on that task book, my captain was like, hey, it was Chief Billy Siemens, he still works there. And it was Engineer John Pop, who retired as a battalion chief. They took us out and they're like, okay, get the creeper out. And I'm like, get the creeper out, man. I'm like, okay. I start tracing the plumbing. And I'm like, what? He's like, every discharge, every valve, every elbow, every little nook and cranny of this plumbing, you're going to know where it goes. He said, you're not just going to pull some lever and set some pressure. You're going to understand where every really like turn is in that truck. So, man, we literally, I think, did almost an entire pump like maintenance because we had the panels off. I'm under the truck. I'm tracing things. I'm like, cool, you're going to sign me off. And he goes, nah, we'll talk about it next week. And I'm like, cool. Go out there. And he's like, all right, this discharge, where does it run? This intake, where does it run? Where's the pressure relief valve in there? Where's the foam pickup at? Where's the actual pressure sensor at? And I'm like, damn, dude. And like, people don't realize that. I was like, where's your, you know, I tell people all the time, where you got to know where your pressure sensors are at, because that pressure you're seeing on that gauge, that pressure sensor might be 6 inches from behind the discharge. It might be 6 feet sitting in the middle of the truck. So you're still getting an awkward discharge pressure if you don't know. So like, that opened up my eyes to like, just right there. I was like, damn, dude, there's so much more to driving than you need to know. And I think that's where I learned to have a real good in-tune sense with understanding your truck, understanding the capabilities of your truck, the nooks, the crannies, the little things. Coming from a mechanical background, coming from a racing background growing up, like, I understood that. Like, yeah, you got to know your stuff. And I'm with you, man. You got to know the sounds of your truck. You got to know the nuances of it. You got to understand the troubleshooting. You know, I worked for another engineer. I'm gonna name drop a little because some of my guys were giving me crap on the last one that I didn't give them some credit and some shout out. So I got two engineers that I work with. I have a, we call him Chauffeur. He likes to be called Chauffeur, and we joke. Jason Pickett, he's A shift 202 or 201. And Ben Keating, he's a retired engineer. And both of them have a mechanical background, and they're big into troubleshooting and just teaching guys of like, hey man, like, that's cool. We can train all day long and I can teach you when everything's going right. It's when shit goes wrong on that panel, people forget you're the only guy out there. Your captain's inside, your chief's in the command rig, your mechanic's not there to help your ass, your senior firefighter's probably on the line. You got to understand how to fix that problem or mitigate that problem or go to plan B or C right away. And you see it all the time. And I'm listening to Zach again this morning. You know, Zach hits it hard. We suck at getting water. We suck at understanding how water moves through our pump. We suck at getting it out, whether it's through booster backup, hydrants, understanding hydrant systems, tenders, whatever you're using. We ultimately think we can put everything out with freaking tank water until you don't have tank water. And then you got to understand the nozzle. Okay, what are they flowing? How much tank water do I have? You know, I hear all these guys all the time, like, well, we have 800 gallons. Like, okay, well, what is that in time frame? And I get it. We're not always interior spraying water. But you got to have a mindset like, dude, if I got 800 gallons, that's maybe 4.5 minutes of water. You know, so you're praying in 4.5 minutes, your firefighter on that line is intentionally putting that water where it is. And so when I was driving, you know, and I have a different take because I came from driver back to being it. So I have a little bit different take on it than some of our move up drivers because I did the job. But man, when I would see guys spraying the front yard or spraying the neighbor's freaking car, what the fuck are you doing, man? You're wasting my water, man. Like, put that stuff somewhere in the house. Even if you're spraying the roof, spraying it, do put it somewhere where it's intentional. So understanding your time, and you know, we all say it, the first 5 minutes of a fire scene is chaotic for any first do or second do engineer. And we don't train to that. And I think we forget because we, you know, I'm sure you hear it on your side. Oh, we're 80% or 85% EMS. I just need you to drive the engine to get to the medical call. We forget that other 15% is life or death. 100% of the time, driver safety, always. We got to preach driver safety. I'm not the safest driver in the world. I will be 100% honest about that. I know the capabilities of our rigs. I know the capabilities of my driving skills. Do most drivers who drive all the time get on the edge occasionally? 100%. Do I believe my job is 100% to get my crew to the scene safely? Absolutely. Efficiently? Absolutely. With a little bit of speed? Absolutely. You're always looking for that. So number one, being a move-up driver or just a driver in general, getting your crew to the scene safety, like safely. That's it. Get them there, make sure they can get there and do their job. If you have to shut down, you have to go slower. If you can push the limits a little bit, it matters, right? We all go on the edge. So that's the first one. And guys don't understand that. I have young guys who get in the seat now, and I'm sure I was the same way. You think you're driving, your 1500 Chevy Silverado driving around town, and you start flying around. It's like, hey, man, you got a freaking, 40,000-pound truck right now that you're trying to stop on a dime. We joke in the ladder truck, like, there's times, hey, man, we ain't stopping at the intersection because it's going to cause more damage just to go through. Like, pray to God, we're going. So getting there and driving safely, right? And then the most crucial thing when you get onto the scene right off the bat is, just understanding what your role is going to be. Listening to the radio, listening to your captain. Am I coming in first due? Am I coming in second due? Am I coming in third due? Am I on the truck? Am I on the engine? So understanding what your role in that operational model is going to be in that tactical size up. We were blessed our last fire. We were actually on an EMS call, heard the call go down. We were unsure it was, we had talked about in the last one that we run a kind of a split ladder truck response. This one fell onto that weird area because we were on a call. They pulled from the fort. We weren't sure if they were responding in a tower or not, a ladder. So my cap was like, hey man, let's clear. We walk outside and it's like, fuck, dude, that's a header. Like we could see it. And we were the furthest way away. And we're like, okay, get dressed, let's go. So we're heading all the way across town and I'm watching. And I'm even talking to my captain, like, you got to know your routes, right? So I'm like, hey, you want me to take the back way and cut through, the neighborhood, or do you want me to head down the highway and then take the highway, even though we're going through a couple more intersections, having that discussion on the way. And he's like, hey man, just take the highway. Like, I think we'll make up, we going through the neighborhood, we're not going to make up any time where it's at because we might have to approach differently. Like, coffee, man. We start watching the header. We're rolling in. We're rolling in. We're listening to the radio traffic. Our engine one guys, they got on scene. They're getting a knockdown. Fry Fire engine 142. They got on scene. They're getting a knockdown with them. And as we pull up, I'm looking at it from because I'm on the truck, right? So truck, aerial water, vertical ventilation if we have to, things like that. So we're in a different mindset. We're in an actual, I think, truck company mindset there. I'm rolling up and I see that they're stretching a 4-inch. And it's like, okay. Got to get his placement on it, right? Got to get a good spot. Looking at the BC, I'm hearing him on the radio. And he's like, I'm looking at Sam, like, hey, man, you want me to prep for aerial water? Like, it looks like it's in the attic. Is it pushing through? Like, what do we need to do? Yeah, hey, start prepping. So, I went into aerial mode first. They jumped off, they went in, did search rescue, fire attack, and I started setting up for aerial water just in case if we start losing it to the roof. Move up drivers, we got to understand what's going on the scene. And we talked about, reading the scene. Every position's reading the scene constantly. I could have easily pulled up second due, third due, and not got a water supply. So technically third due in our operation is supposed to get a water supply. But it's like, hey man, we're first due truck. We need to get in there and kind of get aerial placement set up. So we already knew that. Like, well, hey, we'll backstretch to a hydrant. We got 1,000 gallons on the fry truck. We got they were running out of the Type 3, so they had 800 gallons on their truck. We got 500 on ours. Like, okay, we can start putting a damper on this thing. Watching them, they're already stretching line. Cool, that's already taken care of. So now I can go into aerial mode. Then, as I got the aerial up, got it in place, it starts reading the scene. What's not done? You, as an engineer or driver, operator, chauffeur, whatever you want to call yourself, look what's not done now. I looked over Pickett. He's working his butt off. He's pumping. He's setting up the slide. Cool, I'll start getting the on deck tarp ready. Get the extra equipment out. So I'm pulling saws. I'm pulling the rip bag. I'm pulling attack packs. I'm pulling chain the saws. I'm pulling the sawzall. I'm throwing ladders to the both Bravo and Delta sides of the building. So if they have to get up and look at the gable end attack, I'm dumping my truck, man. Like my truck should be in the front yard. Listening to the radio, what are they anticipating? Oh man, hey, we got to get more ceiling. We got vaulted ceilings. Cool. Go get the 12-foot pike poles. Go get the 12-foot, go get the New York hook so they can pull siding if they have to. So I think we don't teach that enough sometimes in training because we get very limited time in training. And I watch guys, they set the pressure and then they're just staring. And it's like, cool, you're watching us fight fire, imaginary fire in the parking lot. But like, dude, start getting your reps down, Is it a second story? Okay, my ladders are probably going to come off first. Are they getting ready to bring a crew up to be writ? Cool. I'm going to get them a set of irons. I'm going to get them a writ bag ready. Are we working interior where we're busting down walls and things like that? Okay, I'm probably going to get some more of the hand tools out so that they can go inside and pull ceiling, pull siding. Get the extra tick out if they're looking. Get air bottles ready. So it's a hard job to define. But I say, guys, like that's the one guy who can make or break your operation. Is if you don't have a strong driver, shit's not gonna get done. Like, I don't want my captain to come out and have to walk all the way to the damn truck to ask me for something. I want to meet him at least halfway, if not at the door, and be like, hey man, it's on the ground over there. Hey man, saw's right there. Got you. Hey, you need it. Like, you start hearing, hey, we're recycling. Boom, I got two bottles ready. Hey, let me give you a shot of water. Got a bottle in my hand. Let's check your bottle. Hey man, pat them down. You good? You going back in or you coming for rehab? No, I'm going right back in. You need anything before you go back in? Nah, man, I'm good. Cool. They're gone. I hate wearing my headset on the fire ground at times because it just gets in the way. I want, we carry the double headsets. I wish it was more like coaching football where I have one ear and then I have one ear open so I can hear my truck. So I always got my headset kind of cockeyed and I'm trying to listen to my truck, listen to things going on the fire ground. But you just got to read that scene and you got to know that what you're doing is going to make a difference. Too many guys get in that position, even as the move up guys. And I'll say it, man, they're lazy pieces of shit, man. They don't want to do it. They don't want to put the work in to understand it. It's they don't have to go in and get their gear dirty, But man, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with it. You're the last guy. I'm usually like when I was driving, I was always the last guy to shower, man. I went through my compartments at the end of a fire. I was cleaning all of my tools. I was inspecting them, making sure everything got, nothing got chingered up, nothing's damaged, that it's all ready to go. The truck's washed and we're clean and everything is just squared away. That says a lot about an engineer. Like, listen to guys lately, like, oh, station pride isn't just washing trucks and scrubbing toilets. And it's like, I understand that it's taking pride in the job, but man, part of our job is knowing that our equipment is ready. I mean, you don't see, a Marine Corps guy, his rifle is always in top-notch condition. He may never fire that damn thing, but it's clean and it's ready to be fired if he has to fire it. Cops, they carry a gun too. They don't fire those things every day, but they make sure they're clean and ready to go. So why are we no different? If our truck needs to be done a certain way, if our truck needs to be cleaned, if we need to dump a hose load to fix it, if you're having issues getting things off of it, man, take the time to clean it. Take the time to take care of it. If the irons look like shit, dude, go take them to the grinder. Go grind them down real quick. Clean them up. It takes you 10 or 15 minutes. And now that set of tools is going to stay like that for 2, 3 months. Drives me nuts, man. Drives me nuts because, again, we talked about it last time. Our chiefs buy us good stuff. I don't think any of us are really running crap tools and stuff. But then when we don't take care of it, it's like, well, now, chief, we got to buy another one. Now they're pissed off at us. Why? Well, we're just not taking care of it. But we don't admit that. Like, oh, we just didn't take care of it. Like, man, take care of our stuff, man. It'll last a lot longer.
And first off, I have to say, yeah, I have to agree with everything that you said. There's no way I can't because going back to the knowing of your truck, I could tell you the truck I'm on now, it's Pierce Ascendant, it's 300 gallons. If I pull, we have two crosslays, one's 200 foot, one's 300 foot, inch and three quarter, running 50 PSI nozzles. If I pull that line, or if I have my firefighter pull that line and I charge it, I know it's roughly a minute 30 to a minute 45, and then I'm out of water. I have to, and we have a first due. So you have to be quick on getting your water. You have to relay that to your firefighter. Your firefighter needs to know, hey, if I don't need to flow, I'm not going to flow, because to catch your own hydrant before you run out of water. Like, so we pump our 200-foot crosslay at 90 PSI. All right. You're like, oh, 90, pretty good. For 300 gallons, that shit's going quick, man. Like, you have to be on the bubble for it. So that's one thing with our truck that people need to understand. Time, water. Second thing is, you mentioned it. I guarantee you there is a truck in everyone's fleet where the truck does not go into pump gear the first time.
Every
We
all the time.
have one that notoriously does not go into pump gear the first time, okay? Teaching new people that, if I like to see, like, whenever they don't know, and I'm like, yeah, go ahead and check it off. Go ahead and check the pump. And then they do it and they're like, hey, something's wrong. What's going on? I'm like, I don't know, man. Look, what's going on? And then you either some of them catch it or some of them don't. And you're like, hey, you got two green lights in your cab. Is your transmission showing 4 and 4? And they're like, oh. I'm like, yeah.
Right?
I
That's
learned
your.
that. I learned that being a major factor when we had Dr. David Griffin from Charleston come down, and he was the operator of the first new engine that day. And they had a truck that did that, and he did not know that. And that stuck with me after I listened to that whole thing. Was, you gotta know your truck. You gotta know what the truck sounds like. You gotta know what, whenever something doesn't sound right. Man, I mean, everything you said, it's more than just driving, and I don't take driving lightly. Like, I believe in myself. I am a good operator. There's things I can still learn. There's still things I want to learn, and I'm kind of looking for outside influence on getting more ins and outs of your, whether it's the engine or the truck, and what it sounds like. Little tips and tricks here and there, man. So I'm
Dude,
always.
and that's a hard thing, right? So even when I was engineering all the time, there's not a lot. Like I feel like the driver, operator, engineer, chauffeur position, it's very undervalued in the fire service. There's a lot of things that we don't talk about. Like we go to firefighter, and then a lot of us have to drive, but we forget as a whole that rank structure, because then it's all focused on being a leader, being an officer, then being a chief officer, being a command tactician, and all this shit. The driver operator, there's not a lot of literature. There's not a lot of guys out there. So, like, finding guys like Zach Varela. I have a good mentor up in Mesa, Mike Davis, dude. Mike is, I call him Mr. Water, dude. He is now a captain, but man, I could call him and he would talk pump numbers and he'd even tell me, like, what's the serial number on that pump? And I'm like, let me look. I look, I tell him, he's like, oh, okay, it's got this feature, this feature, this feature. It's going to do this, it's going to do this. And it's like, damn, dude. So we suck as a fire service with the engineering side. That's something I've actually been starting to kind of like dive deep into and dealing with you is like, man, it's time to start bringing in driver operators to podcasts, get them on YouTube, start shooting some stuff, and get those guys caught up, because it's a position that's missed. One thing that I started doing is when I started working in NASCAR, we're on the clock all the time, right? Because we have TV. You know, we don't have time to walk around. We have time standards just like we do in the fire service, but the drivers need some time stamps too. Like, how fast can I get water? How fast can I get my aerial set up? But then even internally, okay, how long is it going to take me to stretch 200 feet of 4 inch or 5 inch in those cases that run 5 inch? We run 4 inch to the hydrant and make an actual hydrant. You know, we train pony roll, 25 footer, we spot in front of the hydrant. Oh yeah, sweet. Like, bullshit. Fucking bullshit. I'll just say it as it is. That never happens. You know, I did the math. I've been on maybe 50 fires in my career, you know, over 17 years. I could probably count on one hand how many times the hydrant was 25 feet from my truck. And I'd probably even guarantee it's probably less than that. So understanding how hard it is to stretch 200 feet. You know, what are you going to do when that hydrant is 300 or 400 feet away and the third due engine forgot to bring in a supply? We've had that happen. Hey man, did you catch the hydrant? No. Damn it. You and the other engineer are humping 400, 500 feet. Done that. Ain't fun. So you got to understand how long things take, you know? And then you also have to be a realist and relay that to command, like, hey, command, hydrant's 200 feet away. I got to make my own supply. So that command's now thinking, we might run out of water for a second. You're propping your crew. Hey, man, we might run out of water if he's taking a stretch because it's going to take him a minute or two to make that hydrant. And that's if you make a solid hydrant with no hiccups. All the caps come off easily. The stem's not screwed up. You know, the last one I made, it was up against a brick wall, and we don't have the ratcheting wrenches. So it's like I had to quarter turn, flip it, quarter turn, flip it, quarter turn, flip it. So I had to flip that wrench probably 40 times before there was even water somewhat charging the line. So things happen. So understanding how fast it takes you to do certain things, how fast can you make your on-deck tarp? I challenge guys, and like I said, coming from NASCAR, where my crew chief there, you know, he is all about our time of efficiency. Like, hey man, we got to get to that driver's door in 20 seconds. Hey, if we have to cut this car, we have like 2 minutes because they're on a commercial. Like, TV is money up there. Like, there's a money side of it. If they're not racing, people are pissed off. Sponsors are pissed off. Teams are pissed off. So it's like, hey man, we got to get up there. We got to cut that door. We got to do this. We got that. We got to drive out, get them to the care center. You'll watch it. Watch a NASCAR race and watch what happens when a crash happens. You're going to see dudes balls out for 2 to 3 minutes to make everything happen so we can get that track cleaned off and they can go gracing again. It's transitioned over into the fire service. You know, I was laughing the last fire, we had all the chief officers there and they're walking around and they're just watching like me and Pickett just running around like bat out of hell, just boom, boom, boom. And they're like, dude, you guys look like you were on freaking drugs for a moment. It's like, dude, it's the two of us trying to get everything done so our crews can operate. So yeah, I tell all the guys out there, if you're a move-up driver or you're a newer engineer, even a seasoned engineer, like if you don't know your truck, if you don't know how much time it takes to do things, if you can't explain it, sorry. Like you're not gonna, I'm not gonna feel bad for you because that's a job portion of yours too to move up.
Yeah, no, agreed. And you know the sad thing, you said it, and Zach Varela definitely hit on it, man. We have people that are hiding right now behind the wheel that think that they're God's greatest gift to the fire service when all they know is how to pull levers, watch gauges. I mean, the trucks nowadays pretty much run themselves, set it and forget it. And we have guys that think, hey, I'm good. Like, but what happens if you have to make that stretch of LVH?
Well, and I think you got to be humble too, listening to Zach. He's right. You got to be 100% humble. And I love his take on it. It's like, I'm not a humble guy. But I know this, listening to him on numerous podcasts and researching him and seeing stuff that he does. I think if things go wrong, dude's humble. He talks about it. We have so many guys on the panel that I can't question you how you lost water. You could probably give me the biggest bullshit reason in the world of why you fucked up. And I'm going to have to semi-believe you because I can't prove it. I might call, like, I might have a suspect in the back of my head, like, that doesn't make sense to me. But you're by yourself. And there's a lot of guys who make mistakes that just can't own it, man. Like, I got a file full of mistakes I've made in my career, you know, personnel, on the fire ground, whatever, man. You got to own them and you got to move on from them. And you got to
Absolutely.
learn and just make sure it doesn't happen again. And I've made multiple mistakes twice and 3 times, but, you know what you're doing on that panel. It is life or death in there, man. And yeah, he's right. You can't hide. So
No, man, you're right.
I think we beat that one up pretty good.
You're absolutely right. And I'll say this last thing. So, the last fire we had, I had a helmet cam footage of it, and I so that way everybody out there listening can know it's okay to fail. It's definitely, you need to learn from your mistakes. But at one point when we were going defensive, my captain was up in the bucket. He was like, hey, I'm ready for water. Bro, I had a moment where I was looking at the pump panel and I'm like, where the fuck is the valve for that? And I was literally sat there and I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck?
You're
And then
probably staring at the you're probably staring at the turn wheel.
it clicked and I'm like, fucking deluge. Open it up. Here comes this water. But like I am 100% transparent to admit that. Like you know, it's what time was it? Like 3, 4 something in the morning. You're getting all this other stuff. Like you said, the first 5 minutes, man, we were first in. It's very chaotic. So like my brain had to process what my eyes were seeing. And I was like, oh shit, there it is. But it was right there in front of me. So you gotta know your truck. I can't stress that. If your goal is to be a driver operator, man, number one, be the best firefighter you can be. And as you're transitioning to that, follow or find someone that's a really good driver operator that you want to kind of emulate. Or if they're humble enough, they're going to tell you, no, you don't want to emulate me. You want to be better than me. Because I had two guys that I try to emulate. One no longer drives a fire truck anymore. He's a logistics chief. And you name drop, so I'm a name drop. I learned from Chief Neil Brawley how to drive. That man can fucking drive an engine like no other. And then the second person behind him, because he learned from him, was our engineer, Justin Sigmund. So those two, that's who I want to emulate. That's how I learned how to drive. Some people might not like it. They might say, hey, they drove a little too fast, blah, 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 blah. To me, it's all on the driver. Like, I make sure my captain is comfortable with my driving. He knows we have standards where we tell the public, hey, we're on scene within 5 minutes, right? Well, in order to get there in 5 minutes, you kind of have to drive in a way to get there in 5 minutes. Now, I'm not saying you need to be balls to the wall for a freaking flyer who fell, who keeps falling once a week that you go to the house. No. But if it comes out as a structure fire, working, entrapment, pin in, I'm gung ho. That floor pedal is being matted down, and I'm going to do it safely because I don't want to be in a wreck. I don't want to have to explain to my captain's wife, hey, why, God forbid, something happened to him. And it was because I was driving like an idiot. You gotta know your truck. And I'm gonna leave it at that. You gotta know your truck.
100%, 100%.
All right, man, let's switch topics to, let's talk about that zero impact thing. I like how you mentioned that earlier. So let's hit on that.
So, I mean, that'll tie in. So, we've been talking about zero impact period in our department the last couple of weeks, when in comparison to like turnout times. And so, I had to reach out to my mentor, Chief Slayer. So, we teach a class at our Arizona State Fire School. He taught it, and then now he's passed it off to Captain Jason Reardon of Mesa Fire. They call it zip, but it's the zero impact period. And so when Slayer and I were kind of talking about it, I said, hey man, like what exactly are we doing with this? Like what does it mean? I can't really find much on it. He's like, dude, it's really kind of like made up in a sense, you know. And Scott Thompson, Chief Thompson, talked about it at FDIC in his speech about, you know, the zero impact period, minimizing it. And I'm like, okay. And then he's like, you know, I told you, he coined this phrase from Glendale Chief Dan LaFond. And he said he heard him say it, and that's where he kind of changed it. Where when we taught tactical hose management, which was like a mix of like Brian Brush and Aaron Fields, just hose management, Slayer expanded on it. And I think that comes from teaching with all these conferences, you know, teaching with fire by trade and understanding like it's not just hose management that's going to make us effective on the fire ground. It's potentially making the rescue. It's forcing the door. It's getting the ladders up. So they teach now hose man a speed hose management. Getting effective knock on the fire, doing that quick search, getting that primary, going straight to VES, forcible entry, things like that. So we're kind of talking about it, and I know I'm gonna offend some fire chiefs and some people around here when I say this is, you know, we go over it every month. We go over turnout times. You know, I don't know if you guys do. So we get the data of like, oh, this truck turned out the fastest. And I'm like, you know, and I see it. I'm a firefighter, you're a firefighter. We know how to beat those times to get chief off our back. Hey, fastest dude, get out there, click en route to the scene, but
Boom.
we're really not rolling out the door. So to all of us, like we're our own worst enemies, like, okay, you're gonna present us with a problem. We're gonna find a way to shut you up so you're not on our ass anymore about our turnout times, right? I think turnout times are complete bullshit. You know, fine, I can get somebody out there to hit the button, but really in reality, we're not rolling out that door for 2 minutes. Oh, that's cool. You know, A202, you guys were freaking 48 seconds out the door. Like, on paper we are. Maybe we were 1:30, maybe we were 1:20. But you know, I think we should start measuring it. And I think the true measure is the moment we click en route and we're rolling out that door, we cross the apron and we're on the street to the moment where we're making an impact on the scene. That's what I think is an effective fire company. You know, and Slayer has always preached that, and I think it finally clicked in his head of what we were preaching all these years of him telling us like speed is a factor on the fire ground, being efficient is a factor on the fire ground. The more speedy you are, the more efficient you are, the faster of a knockdown or mitigation of the situation is it going to make. So that's that zero impact period is that I think what everybody's calling it now, right? You know, And it goes on, and I think it's Frisco Fire has a YouTube kind of short on it, and they're talking about, you know, it's the driving to the scene, getting there effectively. It's the stretch. How fast and how effectively can you make the stretch? You know, how fast can you mask up with your gloves on? You know, are you masking? Is it taking you an extra minute to mask up, or is it 30 seconds? Do you have to take your gloves off? You know, was your stretch clean? You know, going to Minuteman loads has helped us be faster on that. You know, forcible entry. So it's a tool that's left out. We practice in parking lots where there's no freaking doors. We go to house fires, structure fires. Every structure has a door. So when we're training, we should try to train on how fast is it going to take us to force that door. You know, and again, that goes back to my segment on understanding what how much time it takes you to do certain tasks. Time adds up. It takes us 3 minutes to get there to your first do. If it takes me a minute to stretch my hose, it takes me a 30 seconds to mask up and then another minute to force the door. What are we at? Like 6.5 minutes right there? Like, damn, like that may be good, that may be bad, but you get that company where they had an issue. Drive time was 5 minutes, stretch was 2 minutes, mask up was a minute, forcible entry was 2 minutes, 7, 9, 8, 10 minutes now before you're making an impact. So understanding efficiency in that zero impact period, which is that chaotic 5 to 10 minutes of any scene, and making the best of it. And we have to train to that standard. And I you know, I learned this from a guy that I worked with forever. He was retired military E8. He always preached to us, it's not train till you get it right. It's train till you can't get it wrong. And we would finish a drill and we'd beat the time and everybody like, okay, we're done, we beat the time. And Scott would be like, nope, we're gonna fail because we did it once. We did it once and now is it. But those repetitions over and over of him and me out in the bay and him teaching me things was like, nah, man, you're gonna pull that hose till you can't get it wrong. Till you know how to fix every little nuance when you get hung up, how to get it around corners. Hey, no, you're gonna mask up 5 times in a row and beat your time so that I know you can do it. You know, you're gonna mask up left hand, you're gonna mask up left. And even in the zero impact period, we've been talking of like being ambidextrous. You know, we do things one way. We're all dominant with one hand or the other. Well, in the fire service, that's not possible. You know, you're gonna have to be able to force the door with your left hand. You're gonna be able to have to cut the garage door the opposite way, over your head, under you, sideways. You might have to get to the left side of the hose because the hallway and the wall is on the right, and you want your butt up against it, and you want your hose stream to go the other way. So teaching guys to be ambidextrous in there lessens your zero impact period. Understanding that we need to get in there and we need to make a knock on the fire. And I hope some chiefs start writing more about this zero impact period and understanding that turnout times are great and turnout times are good for MFERS and, you know, OSHA and all these data points we have to have. We're out the door in 30 seconds. Nah, man. The citizen should care more about how fast and effective are you getting to my house and putting a dent on whatever I called you for. You know, we talk about time is tissue in EMS. The faster you get on scene, the faster I can mitigate a chest pain patient or a stroke patient and get them to a higher level of care. That's the golden hour. They don't give a shit that it took me 30 seconds to get out the door in the ambulance. They care how fast did I get that patient taken care of on scene with whatever interventions I'm doing, and then how fast did I get them to the doctor or the care center and the higher level of care? Well, in the fire service, we don't look at that sometimes. We don't look at going past the turnout time and how fast and effective our companies are. And we all know it. We have companies in our department where if we started timing this, dude, there'd be some upset captains. There'd be some upset crews because they would be exposed. They would be exposed of, hey man, that's cool that you click the button and you can put your turnouts in 2 minutes, but you can't force the damn door and get interior and get a search done in 2 minutes. Like Mrs. Smith is in there for 2 minutes with no respiratory protection, no help, no aid, no water. Like, I bet you if that was your family, you'd be hauling ass. But because it's not your family, you don't have that mindset, you know? So, that's where I say, you know, we should be measuring some of our timetables.
To add to that, so I'm gonna go back to, man, you of anyone listening to this knows you're truly a fireman because I'm sure there are plenty of departments that have that. Hey, I could tell you for us, I'm pretty sure it's During the day, 60 seconds out the door. At night is 90 seconds for us. They will remain nameless, but I have worked with officers who we will get a call and they will go, shit, man, I'm gonna go pee. And I'm not trying to knock my department. I'm being 100% real. I'm being 100% transparent. There are people out there that will do that. It's like, what kind of call is it? Yeah, I'm gonna go pee real quick. And it's like, all right, we have officers. And I'm not saying we as in my department, I'm saying overall in a fire service general, we have officers that will tell the newest guy, hey, we get a call, run to the truck, hit that button, all right? Yeah, so on paper, you're looking, man, they got out the door in 40 seconds. But what I find funny is when you watch videos of and a pre, of course, people are gonna go, because this is all I know, people. So unless there's a West Coast department out there, share your shit, I will give you some credit. But what I'm saying is when you watch DC, PG, Bedford, Forest, people always make fun of, oh, look at these guys. They're running to the truck like a bunch of idiots and they get out the door fast. That's the whole point of it. And then now this is going to be for the safety Nazis, the safety gurus of, well, they're getting in the truck. What kind of call is it? Oh, it's some sort of fire alarm or something that's going to require structural firefighting gear. They're going down the road and they're not getting dressed. Newsflash, I can tell you, I'm being 100% transparent. My training chief listens to this. I don't always have all my shit on when we're going down the road. It gets on quick and then my seatbelt goes on. This is the real world for me. I live in the real world. So, with where my station is at, we have to pull out, make a right. We're not on the main road yet. Then we either, most of the time, we're going left up our hill to go to a call. By the time we're turning left and before we can kind of start cresting up the hill, my seatbelt is back on. Like we have to, chiefs have to let firemen, you have to give them some leeway. You can't say we want you out the door in this time frame, but then expect you to have every single thing dialed in and on and your seatbelt click. Like that's
Right.
not being real. And I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but we have to live. You have to be in the moment to understand. Like, I'm not saying it's not impossible, but there's going to be things like, oh shit, I forgot this belt buckle, this loop. Let me click it in. And then click, seatbelt goes on. You know what I'm saying?
I laugh. Like, I don't know if you've ever looked at our trucks. Some of the manufacturers like put a warning label on the side of the doors or somewhere in
On
there.
fucking everything,
But have you
yes.
seen like the one where it's like if you wear your
Wear your
helmet,
helmet.
you might be
Yep.
decapitated? And I'm
Exactly.
like, so we do 2-minute drills where we have guys throw their pack, get all their shit on, jump up in the truck, seatbelt on. I'm like, obviously none of these dudes have ever worked on a ladder truck, because even me, I'm 5'10", and my helmet hits the roof, and I'm like, fuck this, dude. My helmet sits in my lap. My gloves are not on when I get in the truck. My pack is probably halfway, it's on, but it's not even buckled. So like I got my jacket, I got my ladder. Actually, my ladder belt's probably not even on most times too. And I think the last time I was in the back seat when I remember getting it, I'm like laughing because they're laughing at me. They're like, you're eating hot tamales on the way to a fire right now. Like, dude, we got like 10 minutes to get to the fire where we're at. Like, my shit's on. I'm like chilling. Like, when we start getting closer, I'm listening to the radio. Yeah. Hot tamales go away. The monster gets put in the cup holder. Okay, now I'm dialing in, man. Like, I'm listening, but I'm like, now I'm really just like, okay, we're 5 minutes out. Like, okay, starting to get my freaking gloves on. Am I masking up before I get off the truck because we're going straight to work? Or am I going to leave my mask off because we're going to do something extended where I'm stretching a line, or we're going, writ, or we're going something? Putting my helmet on as soon as we got there. My shit's not on. Shit, sometimes my helmet's not even on my head till I open the door to get out and I put my helmet on because, again, I work on a ladder truck. There ain't no room for me to put my helmet on. And anybody that says they do, I'm like, you're full of shit. Like,
Bullshit. I mean, that's
I get it.
yeah.
Like, if it's right around the corner, 100%, I'm probably going to take 2 extra seconds. If I
Right.
know it's right around the corner, yeah, I'm going to take 2 extra seconds. I'm probably going to have all my stuff. But if we're a second due or it's a little ways away, like for us, we go to our golf course community quite a bit. Golf course community takes us about 3 or 4 minutes to get there. Even then, I'm like, I can put my gloves on and route. I can finish buckling my pack. I can throw my radio in. I can change it. So, yeah, man, just to tell people that you're always fully bunkered out when we do these drills, it's like, this is not realistic, man.
It's
Like,
not.
we could do this drill. I get we have to have standards, but it's like in real life, like I'm putting half that crap on when we're rolling down the road.
No, it's you're 100% right. And yeah, I've seen those stickers and I'm like, Well, fuck, if the damn manufacturer's telling me if I wear my helmet, I might be decapitated, then why the fuck am I wearing? Which I don't. That's the last thing. Like when we're pulling up, like, so I'm gonna be transparent. When we're on the road and we can start seeing flashing lights of other apparatus there, my seatbelt goes click and you're gonna hear beep, beep from the, that's how Pierce's works. Whatever. Like we're here, I'm getting ready to go. But yeah, man, I understand we need to have that time frame scale of yes, we need to be out the door in certain things, but like, I'm a huge proponent where if we get a call and we're at the station, man, people need to be running. Like you need to be running to the truck, not walking. Like you need to run to the truck. Now it's all, of course, common sense, situational dependent. If it is a routine traffic type call for, I don't know, something smoldering or some bullshit call, sure. But fire alarms, medical calls, especially medicals that involve CPR, true CPRs and progresses, NVAs, pin-ins, residential fire, all that good stuff, man, we need to be out the door quick. So I'm with you on that zero impact. And I like how you brought that up for hopefully chiefs to hear that.
Well, I think, like we talked about too, is, Chief Thompson touched on it's setting up your rig right too, man. Making sure you know your hose loads, making sure you know where your equipment's at. Like when we switch into rigs all the time, we're in half of our backup rigs right now. And I'm watching guys set up rigs and stuff, and it's like, that's the last thing I'm gonna pull. So throw that in the dunnage. But I want to be able to get to my irons quick. I want to be able to get to my pike poles quick. I want to get to my New York hook. I want to get to the water can. I want to be able to get to the attack pack, Making sure your trucks are set up for that fast operational period is like your bread and butter shit should be towards the front, and all that random shit we never use should get piled in the back.
Definitely. Definitely, man. I'm with you. I'm with you. All right, let's switch topics here. I want to ask you on what your thoughts on leadership are. Like for
Right.
you, Matt Brown, what should be an example of being a true leader? Whether you're a company officer or chief officer, what does leadership mean to you?
Well, and going through those questions with you and looking at them, the leadership one definitely ties into like which has more weight, right? Your education, your service, your work ethic, your experience. So for me, leadership definitely changes in certain ranks and certain roles. Obviously our fire chief, like they're more of an administrative leader. They have to know the policies and procedures. They are the black and white. They are the, end all be all decision maker at times. And we forget that. Like as you move up, we all want these guys to remain what I call like operational leaders, but we forget a lot of guys making some of our decisions sometimes are in the admin side. They haven't been on a fire truck in a while. So if they're a good leader, they're listening to their men in the operations department. But I know on our end, we have to be better too, because I'm one. I'll stand up in a meeting again and I'll pound my fist on the table. And I'll tell you I don't like something, and I'll offer you my own opinion or my own suggestion on it. But I have to, at the end of the day, we all have to remember, like, hey man, he's got a job to do too. He's got to go answer to City Hall or City Council or the fire board. So he's more the black and white, where the battalions and down, they can be a little more gray area. They can be more like, what's the best for this situation? But for me, a leader is transparent, right? He's transparent. He gives you his expectations up front, and not just his expectations of you, what you can expect of him. I think all leaders always have a good intent. Always. I think anybody in a leadership role, usually 99% of the time, has a good intent. Whether they can follow through with that always, that's where I think things get slippery. But I think everybody who takes a leadership role has the good intent to do what's best for the organization, their men, the fire service, whatever it is. I grew up with a coach in my family. My dad was a coach forever. I played sports all the way through into college. Like, I've always understood leadership. I've coached. So I get leadership from all types of areas. So I don't just pull it from the fire service. So the transparency plays a huge role into that. You tell your expectations, you follow your expectations, you enforce your expectations. But at the time of that, also holding accountability. You're not a good leader if you're not holding anybody accountable. We've all worked for those bosses like that let us slide. I know there's plenty of bosses that have probably saved my ass more than once by letting me slide or whatever, or pulling me in the office and saying, "Hey man, you gotta get your head out of your ass, do whatever it is." But when I do screw up, I am held accountable for my actions, all the time. So a good leader holds their men accountable, but they also hold themselves accountable. I worked for a battalion chief one time. He was late to work. He overslept, showed up like 30 minutes late. Dude, he wrote himself up and then emailed it to the entire shift to be like, "Hey, I overslept. I wasn't here on time. Here's my coaching form. Just want you guys to know." And I'm like, "What the hell?" Like, okay. Like, it was funny, but then like I look back and I go, he wanted us to know, like, "Hey man, he's not above the law either. Like, I have a coaching form, so if I screw up in the next 6 months, like, I'm gonna be held accountable for something." So I like played in my head, like, "All right, man, that's cool. I have a great BC right now. He's out there training with us, man. He listens to us. We just did AARs. We've had three fires on our shift in the last 3 weeks. So we've done an AAR every week. And he did not belittle anybody. He did not knock anybody. There was things that did not go well on the fire from his end, our end, everybody's end. And man, he just said, "All right, guys, like, seriously, we got to sit down. Like, how are we going to get better about this? How do we mitigate this? How do we mitigate that?" Even after the AAR, like, "Okay, hey, we talked about this. Like, what are we looking at?" That's where the zero impact period came up, is like, how do we make this better? How do we make us more efficient with this? How do we get, like, I love leaders that are always looking to push the limit, push the line, and even change the direction of where we're going. You tell me the first moment you tell me as a leader, "Well, that's the way we've always done it," dude, I've turned you off. I don't want to hear you anymore. Because that tells me you're a yes man, or you're just falling into place, and you're not challenging what we are doing as an organization or as a battalion or as a station or whatever to make ourselves better. The fire service should be organic, always evolving, always changing. I mean, let's look at it. We are the fire service. That's what we sell ourselves, right? We're firefighters. Let's look at 90% of what we do. EMS, smoke detectors, public education, CPR classes. For us, lock boxes. We do snake removals because our count, we don't have enough animal control, so we go pick up snakes for people and relocate them. Whatever the public calls for nowadays, the fire service has to show up and figure out how to mitigate it. So it's like, we aren't the fire service anymore. We are just a service, a community service, basically. So having leaders that understand that and are pushing the envelope of what can we do and what can't we do. I love leaders that are finally telling some of our chiefs around, and I'm not speaking just my department, I mean being around everybody, that is telling their chiefs, like, "Hey man, we can't do anymore. Like, whatever task that City Hall wants us to do, like, no, we can't. Like, we still have to be able to respond to calls, we still have to be able to respond to fires, we still have to train and prep for those. Like, we can't do every gas detection. We can't do every lockbox program they need, or whatever it is." So, having leaders that are willing to stand up and understand where the line has to get drawn as well. I'm blessed. We work with great captains and great chiefs that they have meetings every month. They're on the same page. They have their little text group. But I think that kind of expands, like I said, when we start touching on the years of service education and all that. I think leadership ties into that when you're talking about leadership amongst the ranks.
Yeah, 100%. I feel you on that because I feel like there are so many departments out there that are having, it's like, where do you draw the line to say, we just can't? Like, and I look at it as the way I look at,
I'm listening. I still got you. I gotta
no,
step away real
you're
quick.
good. The way I look at the fire service to me is, yes, my department, we do primarily EMS based. I don't know what the percentage is officially, but in my head, we do a lot of EMS first responder calls, followed by vehicle accidents, followed by fire alarms, and very minimal structural, actual working structural fires. So my bread and butter is I want to be good at the EMS, my skills, and then I want to be good at pulling hose lines, searching, throwing ladders, what I call the basics. And I think that you can't expect a crew, especially if they're like a specialty station, to be like, you can't be good at everything. I just can't see. I mean, if you are, man, kudos. But in my experiences, when you focus a lot on one thing, this side tends to you lose a little bit of strength there, and it's like, man, if I need to work on this to get it back. Like, we need to draw a line somewhere in the sand of what we can and can't do. So
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, I used to be on a specialty company, but personally, my opinion only, where I was at, we were focusing too much on that and not on the fire side. And I was like, hey man, you know what? Like this ain't for me. So I'm transferring out. I want to go back to where I can focus my priority on fire and EMS, because it was like every day we were doing something specialty related. And it was like, man, when was the last time this crossleg got pulled? So, and that's just me. And like I said, I am 100% transparent and real. We gotta balance it. There's gotta be a fine balance. And you can't know it all, not with high angle, low angle, structural collapse, trench, hazmat, water rescue. Like, geez, we like, man, there's a lot being thrown on our plate, man. So I agree with you.
Yeah, man. Like it's hard to keep up with all of
It's sometimes it is a bit much, man. It's a bit much. But we're gonna switch gears real quick. I want to hit on how was the 58th convention, man, in Phoenix, the
Oh,
symposium?
dude. Oh, dude. It was awesome. Like going to the union convention and listening to guys and talking with a lot of the agencies around our state, man, dude. We're not immune. It's just proved again, like we're not immune to the problems that are going on in the fire service. We touched on that, the two in, two out rule. We touched on some of the litigation coming down in the US and the IFF and things like that. And everybody's struggling with recruitment and retention. Everybody's struggling with budgets. Everybody's struggling with bills and taxes to cut everything. So I think we as a fire service, the thing I kind of got out of it listening to some of our mentors in the valley is like, and we got to hold on to what we have tight and be a tight-knit group and stay together. Not saying we got to draw lines in the sand and fight with politicians and fight with all that, but truly continue remembering why we're in the fire service, and the brotherhood and the sisterhood that we have. We all have to band together. And that's the chief all the way down to the newest firefighter. All of our chiefs, I challenge them all the time. It's like, man, remember you were that new guy that walked through that door. You always tell us to remember where we came from. Remember where you guys came from too. Like you paved the way for all of us to move up, but we all are on the same page. We all work in the fire department and we all need to stay together and back each other up. It doesn't matter how many years of service you have on. It doesn't matter your education background, whatever, dude. Like we're all on the same page. We're in the same shirt most days. And like people, one thing our president spoke about, he was like, we all wear a navy blue shirt. So in the end, the fire service is one. 95% of American fire service wears a navy blue shirt. So guess what? We're all still blue collar workers. We're still all blue collar workers. Any chief probably wears their blue shirt sometime, whether they're working out or not. Like we're all still a blue collar fire service. So we need to remember that we're blue collar.
No,
So it was awesome, man. It was awesome. Our state does a great job with our union conventions.
and he's definitely right. I mean, you can't, I never, I can never understand or grasp any chief out there that doesn't remember what it was like. Now, granted, it's a different time now. We're dealing with different type of individuals, but if you want things done correctly, right, you gotta lead by example, and that's, I've mentioned this plenty of times on different interviews, man. There's, to me, for me, my personal opinion, there's no greater feeling than seeing a chief out there out in the trenches with the men and women putting in reps, putting in work,
Yeah.
letting members see, ooh, man, he didn't do this correct. All right, next time, bam, he got it. Like, okay, it's okay to fail. It's okay to want to get better. Like, there's no greater feeling in the world than seeing it. It's like, okay, this man or this woman has shown me that they're still in it. I will go through thick and thin for this individual. That's what you want your department. You want men and women that are dialed in, ready to go that distance. Like you hit on very well, I might add, on part one of your expectations.
Yeah, like we touched on it too. We were talking because we have a promotional process coming up, and then the Valley, they're getting ready to do all their hiring. So, usually the union convention, everybody starts talking about promotions and getting in for interviews and stuff. And we talked about that years of service versus experience. And an interesting take came from our vice president, Dan Freiberg, who works for Goodyear Fire. You know, and he said, you know, years of service matter, but what the fuck did you do with those years of service? You know, we have the guys that are 20-year guys that have been in a slow house their whole time and can't step up in front and teach a class, can't step up on the rig and pump and drive and things like that. So years of service and experience go hand in hand for me. Like, what did you do with your 5 or 6 years? Were you at the busy house or were you at a slow house? Did you train while you were at the slow house so you at least have a base of knowledge? Or did you work at the busy house where you ran your ass off, but you applied this all the time? You know, so they definitely, you have to have that balance. But it's like, if you're a 3-year guy trying to promote and you haven't done shit with your career, well, now you're just going to promote into a new position and have another shit with your career. You got to have the experience, you know, and then, you know, education, you know, it is important to me, you know, but I don't think it's as important in the fire service. Education, I think, takes us into trying to be white collar. You know, we're trying to make the fire service at times white collar. And you see a lot of these guys who preach education, and I'm not anti-education by any means. Whether you have associate's, bachelor's, master's degree, doctorate, whatever, you know, you've put the time and the effort in to go to class. I'm a guy, I don't have a college degree. I got 215 college credits and 0 degree. And everybody always looks at me like, are you, come on, dude. It's like, you know, I've just never put it all together, you know, but I've taken plenty of classes. So, you know, it helps. But the white collar guys that are trying to push education tend to be the ones that can't be the blue collar guy and go out back and throw a 24 footer by themselves, that can't beam raise a 35 footer with their partner. Can't stretch the hose correctly. Can't explain to you mechanical advantage and 30 to 1 using the adds end versus the forks end versus inward and outward swinging doors. You know, education is valuable in the fire service. Learning, podcasting, learning from YouTube videos, hitting the books, all that stuff. If stuff. Again, I'm a college instructor. I can't make fun of education because I teach in a formal education area, right? I teach driver operator at our local college. So I have to preach formal education. It's what you do with that education when you're done. Are you the guy that always sits in the classroom and great, you can do the tactical sim on the computer and you know how to click the button and what's next in the order model and you can give a good on scene report? Okay, well, how about when we get on scene and we have that rip roaring fire and you have that mom banging on your window telling you that her son is inside? Can you now apply it to your work ethic? You know, can you apply your education to the training ground where now you're taking a book thing and turning it into real life? Can you adapt? And this is where I'm huge. Like I said, I steal things from the Valley and other agencies all the time. They've done the work. Why are we trying to reinvent the wheel? Tone it down. But are you smart enough to read their policy, pick the pieces out that you like, pick the pieces out that apply to what you guys do? What do we do in our department? What do we do in our region? And then go out and try that and understand, like, okay, this policy states this. This equipment states we can do this. We apply it now and it goes, damn, that doesn't work that way. That's where the work ethic comes in. Hey man, putting the time into to put these practices into play, using the educational background and coming up with operational models that work for what we need to do on the fire ground. That's at every freaking level, man. Like, it doesn't matter. It's at every level. And again, I'm probably going to go on a little quick stint of like, we talk about rank and structure and where does it matter and where does it not matter, you know, communication amongst the ranks. Dude, there's senior men at every level that have to have this education and this experience background. I laugh at my captain because when one of our captains just recently retired, you know, we're messing with like, hey man, you're going to be the old man now. You're going to be the senior captain. And he's like, ha ha ha. I'm like, no, look, Sam, you're the next highest guy with the list. He's like, damn. And we joke with him, you know, it's like, you're the senior captain. So like, senior men at each rank holds rank and file in my eyes. Whoever the senior most captain, whoever the senior most driver is, whoever the senior most firefighter in the agency is, holds a little bit of weight. Then I think it break it down even further. Who's the senior guy at that station? Who's the senior most captain at Station 202? Who's the senior most firefighter at Station 201? Who's the senior most firefighter on that crew? It ain't always the guy with the most time sometimes when you're sitting in a station. I don't care. You may have 17 years on in my case, but if I'm acting like a jackass and I'm not getting it together, it might be the 8-year guy that everybody looks to that's the senior most member. But it matters. Like, those are the guys that should be setting the tone of how our work ethic is, how, the experience is in those places. You got to rely on them.
One thing I will say that kind of goes hand in hand with what we know definitely you were discussing was, now I'm sure it'll never happen, but I wish that, and I'm sure that there might be a department out there that does it, but I truly wish more departments would, when it comes to promotional time, what they would do is factor in, hey, let's talk to the peers that work with this individual and say, hey, would this person be a good fit for captain, lieutenant, whatever? Why and why not? Because to me, there's no, you won't find any truer or realer answer than the individuals that watch how this person works. Instead, it's fluff for 3 days of, hey, this is what I can do. I can pass a test. I can do your assessments. I can do your whatever, your interviews. But in return, you give that person the title, and they are still the same non-motivated slacker that they are. Now they just have a badge that says captain or lieutenant or driver. Like, I really wish, because that and I and this is where it's going to get kind of a little sticky, because HR, some HR areas might say, well, you can't do that because this person might not like this individual. Okay, granted, maybe fair point. But if you want to know someone's true work history, ask the people that they work with. Like, what does this person do? Are they motivated? Do they pencil in checks? If something's not right, do they say, oh, we'll just let the next shift get it? I know people like that. I know people that they put on a bravado for the week of assessments. They get the job and they're the same fucking person that they are before they got it, but we gave them the title. And then this is where I'm sure someone's going to come with a curveball that says, okay, Danny, well, if that's the case, why don't you put in for the position? True.
Oh, hey,
Me.
I'm going through it
Me.
right now, dude.
I look at it as, okay, fair point. But for me, if I don't want to be in that position at that current time, then that's on me. You know what I mean? Like, we need to stop forcing people to promote and do this, that, and the other. If they don't want it, they don't want it. The caveat is, okay, well, if you don't want it and you don't want us to give it to this person, then what do we do? How about we just not promote the person?
And
I
I
mean,
think,
I
like,
know it's going to suck. That, oh, well, we don't have this position filled. I'd rather have a position go unfilled than give it to somebody that doesn't deserve the damn job in the first place. That's just my opinion.
And I mean, again, 17 years around the business, I've seen it here, I've helped with promotional processes elsewhere. There's no right answer for a promotional process. And I think, again, I think it's Chief Thompson and them who talk about it at the colony where they do the peer review. And there's other departments that do different things, but it's just funny. We're all our own products of the same thing in the fire service. Promotions start coming around. Oh, now you start seeing this do the 10 trainings. Oh, now you start seeing this guy show up and put in extra work when things are going on. Oh, he's asking questions. I'll say it. You see the kiss asses. You see the guys that change their mentality, change their mindset all of a sudden. But then what happens after promotions and those guys don't get it? It's this guy's fault. It's that guy's fault. It's this fault. Like, I'll say it. I tested this last round. I had a critical failure on the ladder truck, wiped out my score, put me in a funk. Dude, my testing process went downhill after I failed. Because I was upset with myself. And people think I was upset with the process. And it's like, nah, man. Like, I'm competitive with myself. Like, I came from being a driver. I should be able to nail this test. I teach these guys who I'm testing against. I've signed off on almost everybody I tested against to say, hey, they are state certified Arizona driver operator. And I lost. And it was an internal conflict with myself. Well, if I have test anxiety, I know I can get on the panel any day of the week. I can wheel a truck. I can flow. I can do whatever. That's not being cocky. That's not being nothing. I'm confident in my skills of what I've done, and I've proven that. I can't put together a week-long testing process sometimes without being my own freaking self-destructive self. But you see guys who are just pissed off at it at the end of it. And it's like, well, dude, what did you really do to prep? You know, you prepped a whole month before. Ooh, you opened up your driver operator 3 weeks beforehand. I guarantee you there's guys at many agencies right now that they are getting ready to go to a promotional process, haven't even taken the plastic off the damn book. Probably can't even figure out where their book is from the last time they tested. You know, what happened with me was, is the moment I failed, I got in my funk. My captain kind of was on me. He knew I was upset with myself because I was like, dude, I don't even know why I didn't hit the front wheel lock. Like, it was a front wheel lock. Safety violation. 100% agree with it. Is the air brake going to fail? No. If the air brake fails, we got problems. Like, we got bigger problems in the whole area, but it's like, didn't hit the front wheel lock. I lost points on it. It took me out of the running. But, you know, I bounced back, and like a month later, it was like, screw it, man. Like, I'm getting in the book now. I'm gonna every opportunity I have to go set the aerial up and drive. Every time I get to be the move up driver, I'm gonna, you know, what can I learn from it? What can I not learn from it? Drive the different apparatus in our agency. So, you know, we like you said, we see the guys who just start putting on a front for promotion, and it just drives me nuts because you know what they are and you know what they're about. And if we talked about they're there for the money or they're there for something else, you know. They're going to get found out about, unfortunately, and we know it. People slip through the cracks in every promotional process that, well, they did great on their test. And I'm like, that's cool. Let's look at the other 360 days out of the year, you know, and I
Exactly.
get the HR standpoint because they're like, oh, we gotta be fair. And it's like, I understand that too. Like, there's no perfect process for it. But I just challenge everybody, if you are testing for promotion, really look at what that position entails, the work ethic, the challenges, the things that come with it. That's what matters to the guys, is what that position truly entails. And if you're just a placeholder, sorry man, you're not a real brother or sister then, because you're doing a disservice to the department, you're doing a disservice to our families, you're doing a disservice to the freaking community, man. Like, take it serious. That goes with that, like I said in the last podcast, you know, what is your worth? And know what your all in is at every rank, every structure, every whatever position you're in. Know what your all in means at every position you're on, because that'll help drive you and drive your agency. And if you're not an all in motherfucker, like Chief Slayer says, go flip burgers, man. Go sell real estate. Go do something else that has nothing to do with life safety and protecting your community. It's not for you, man. It's not for you. And we don't need that, and we don't deserve that.
You're right. But the thing is, they won't, because it's job security. You know, it's easy, man. Coming to work every third day, work 10 days a month. I don't have to do
Right.
this. I don't have to do that.
What's my
And
side business doing?
what's my side business doing? So funny thing. I worked a shift where normally if I'm driving, I usually like to make sure the truck's squared away. You know, cleaning wise, and now I'm not saying everybody needs to be like me. I'm different. I'm a different breed. I'm a little OCD on things. But I had an individual come up to me and was like, "Huh, you?" I was cleaning the wheels, and they were like, "Oh, you do that too?" Because I do that when I work. And in my and they laughed about it jokingly, but in my head, I'm like, I just kind of looked at them and I was like, my words were, "Yeah, I bet you do." And it was like one of those like, you're full of shit. And he knew he was full of shit, but he was making a joke. But I'm like, that's not funny, bro. Like, if you think about it, why don't you do that?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we just, it's funny, man. But then, you know, people will hear that and be like, oh, this fucking guy just thinks he, no, I don't think anything of myself. When I come into work, I just do what's expected. Even if it's not written, even if it's not policy, even if my captain doesn't tell me to do it. If you see something, fix it. If you can fix it, fix it. You know, if you can't, like me, I'm not mechanically inclined, I will report it. I will follow the steps that I, but if the truck's dirty real quick, wash it. If the station looks like shit, clean it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand how this is such a hard concept, because the way I look at it is, whenever I see the station being turned over and it looks a mess, you go to the toilet, and I'm going to be very blunt here because I'm sure firemen listen to this. They know you walk into the toilet and you see shit stains on the fucking toilet, pubic hairs on the fucking toilet seat, and it's like, my thought is, what does your home look like?
Right.
Does your wife clean up after you? Is that expected of her? Does your wife work here? You know what I mean? Like, some people might
Well,
find, they might find offense to it, but we're fucking adults.
and it ties back to leadership, right? Well, that's a probie's job. That's the booter's job. That's the lowest man totem pole. Bullshit, man. We all live in this house. We all live in this house. And just to say, like, oh, I noticed this was dirty, so I'm gonna say something to your probie. Now fuck off. Like, so you're gonna wait till we come on shift to say something to us? Like, just clean it, man. Like, clean it and then just like drop a note to the senior guy, like, hey man, like we noticed that the bathroom didn't get clean. Oh yeah, hey, you know, we had a call, whatever. I will make sure it gets on my bed. Like, if you notice I pull out the irons, you know, and I was busting one of my buddy's balls the other day, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, Varick, one of our younger kids, and I'm like, dude, you let your captain walk into a fire with these irons like this? And he's like, what? Huh? Varick, what are you doing, man? You can't let Cap walk in like this. And his captain's up there laughing. And I'm like, man, get the grinder out. Go clean these things, dude. You can't be letting him look like that. And so he's laughing. And we joked. It's like, but it took him 20 minutes. 20 minutes for him to go into the back real quick, grind him down, throw some clear coat on him. And he comes back. He's like, yeah, you're right. We shouldn't even have waited on that. Like, yeah, dude, like, come on. You know, and I'm not perfect. I know I could go to my truck right now and there's things that I could touch up and things that we could do around the station. Everybody's all, no one's immune to it. But it's like, just have that mindset of like, dude, take 10, 15 minutes a shift and just clean something or take care of it and put it back together, because it's gonna make it look a little bit better. It's gonna make things a little easier. And again, that shows that leadership. We're building the blocks for these younger dudes coming in, right? We got 10 probationary firefighters right now, or nine or 10 probationary firefighters right now. Like, every crew has a probie. Somebody's watching what you do. If you don't want them to turn into a shithead, then show them the right way.
Exactly.
Show them, like, hey man, I watched Matt take that axe off and take it over and clean it. Hey, I watched Matt dump the compartment real quick and wipe it down and then put everything back in. Like, it builds a culture that we will hopefully be able to keep turning over and turning over and turning over. And then when they become seniors, they're teaching it. And then when they become drivers, that OCD kicks in. I'm with you, dude. I got OCD all the damn time. And I have to remember, when I'm a move up driver, like, that's not really my rig. I got three dudes that work out of the house. It's their rig. But I'm like, I can't grab the pony bowl. Where is my freaking hydrant wrench? Like, I want it right here. Oh, and so that OCD, it's a good thing when you're a driver. It's a good thing when you're a senior guy, because it functioning and flowing, and we don't want it to be a disaster, you know?
Definitely, man, definitely. Quick question for you, because you mentioned it earlier. So you guys have a Pierce Ascendant, right? Do your ladders come off the rear? All your ground ladders are off the rear, what I call the ladder tunnel.
Yeah, we have two on either side. Ours run down, one on either side. So we have two separate compartments on ours, because we have a stick. So we're 100 foot, we're 107 foot ascendant stick.
Oh, you're a stick. Okay.
Yeah, so we're a stick. So ours is a little bit different configuration. Instead of everything coming out of that big main compartment, we have the 16 footers and the 24 footer on one side, and then we have the 35 footer and all the pipe poles and everything on the other side. So it's split on either side, and it runs the length of the cabinets. So the
Okay.
backside of all of our cabinets on the captain and driver side is the ladder, and then the tank and everything's down the tank and everything's down the middle.
Okay. All right. My question to you, do you notice that you get a lot of dirt and debris in there?
100%, dude. There's no battling that ever. And that's how I can tell if a crew really washed a truck or not, is it's always that back end right there. If you rinse it and it's like, man, rinse this thing off, dude. The dirt starts running down. You see it all in that back thing. Yeah, it's something to do with it. Just, I think, because it's partially open, you just get all that dust kick up
Fuck,
underneath that falls in those. And
dude.
it's a lose-lose situation, man. And even on our engines, it's still similar. Like, those ladder compartments, I think, just don't get sealed. So They're always dirty.
Dude, because I'm just trying, like, it's to the point now where, so ours, we have the main compartment where all of our ladders are in. But man, there's so much soot and shit. When you go to pull it off, it's like fucking grit,
Grease, yeah.
sandpaper. And it's like, what can I do? So my question is, if I rinse it, if I take all the ladders out and I rinse all that water, will that water stay in there or will it go out?
It'll go out. It'll go out because we have the same thing with our bucket, with our backup ladder. It's a 105-foot bucket, but we get a lot of that dirt and debris and the soot and shit from the exhaust and the road grime, especially during monsoons here. Yeah, it'll all leak out because they're not, like, the way it was explained to me is they're not sealed compartments. So
Okay.
everything's going to kind of wash out onto the frame rails and down into the piping and all that. So yeah,
Okay.
you're not going to damage anything if you rinse it out. But yeah,
Okay.
it's a, I think that's a lose-lose battle with any of those compartments off the rear, is just all that exhaust, the road grime, the rear wheels picking up every, the rear drools picking up everything.
Yeah.
It's just throwing all that shit up into your compartments, man.
Yeah. It is a that's one of those things, man. I'm like, that's a fucking design flaw. Like, fix it. There's so
Right.
much dust in
Yeah.
there. It's like, man, this is terrible.
But if we fix it, it's probably, let's just add $100,000 in another 3 months to get your truck built, so you can't seal it,
Yeah, fair point. Fair point, man. All right. Before we end this out, I want you to hit on wellness and truly being there for one another.
Man, this is some topic that's getting hot in the fire service. We say wellness, we automatically think fitness, right? And fitness is super important in our job. We all go through, again, like we talked about, the peaks and valleys. We all go through fitness initiatives and we're on top of our game, and then life happens and we're 20 pounds overweight before we know it, not working out as much. But wellness, dude, like, really, wellness is everything. And I think our department's doing a really good job of preaching wellness as not just a fitness standard, but your mental health, your annual physicals, your fitness assessment tests, your we call it a breathe down, which is, full gear on air, how many stations, how much time, and air consumption, basically test annually. So, and our wildland pack test, that's federally regulated by the Forest Service. So we're doing something every quarter that is fitness related, making you hit that, but it also preaches on the wellness, you got to know the difference. You got to know when your body's not right and your mind's not right. And I think we all push through those envelopes more often than not. 90% of us are going to try to do the job mentally and physically, even when we're not at our best. We show up to the station every day. Everybody's got personal shit going on. Everybody's got internal demons they're fighting. But we're there and we're trying to battle and we're going to do everything we can. So I will never knock any one of us. We will always do our best every day. Now, whether you're physically and mentally at your best and able to apply that, that'll vary. My 50% day, I might think I'm going 100%, but I'm only going 50%. Work shit matters. Like, work shit, stuff that happens at work, it matters. But so do things away. Your home life, your personal life, your whatever, your kids, your spouse, whatever it is, like, those things matter and they mount up too. So, understanding your wellness, understanding how and when to get help, when to go speak to somebody. I came into the fire service, mental health was not really pushed. You got in about the same time. You've understood it. It's not the same, right? I remember we had some nasty calls early in my career. And we'd sit down with the I don't even know if she was a counselor. I don't even know what her background was, but she basically should have sat in a room and tell us we're going to tell her our feelings. And working in a small community, I think she forgot that we're all tied to the community. These are people we know. May not be you this time, but somebody in the department knows somebody of a call we go on almost every day, I feel like. I've ran on family members. I've had to pronounce family members dead. I've had to walk in on shift to my own dad being worked on by a doctor and not sure if my dad was going to live through the night. I've heard addresses of my family go out when I'm on shift. And you become a mental wreck. And we're expected sometimes to just shut that out, come back to work the next day, and go back to work. That's not the case anymore. You know, that's not the case. I think all departments are really taking a huge mental health initiative. The IFF is taking a huge mental initiative on making sure that we are better with our mental health. But I tell guys all the time, like, if you need help, just ask. Just go talk to somebody. Don't wait till it's too late. You know, I've had buddies who have contemplated suicide in the fire service. I've had to go to funerals for it, and you know, everybody always says, like, I wish I would have reached out to that guy and checked on him. He was checking the box of all these suicidal red flags, but we didn't check the box for him. You know, and it's a tough one to swallow. It's we're not immune to it, and especially with the military generation that we're starting to hire from, you know, the Afghan and Iraqi war, the things they saw, the PTSD they went through. It's going to be more prevalent in the fire services. Those guys continue to have similar traumas that we deal with here. Traumas that you don't even think you realize you dealt with, that growing up, things you went through that get triggered by things we see, things we do on the job, may not trigger you today, may not trigger you tomorrow. So I recommend to everybody, like, hey man, like, find those people, find those circles, professionally or personally, that just help you battle through whatever it is. But always you got to remember, dude, you got to give yourself grace and forgive yourself for things too. Like, we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to battle things. We're all human. If you're so hard on yourself, this is just going to continue to spiral out of control. And that's one thing I've been working on going through things is, you know, you got to give yourself grace and figure out how to forgive yourself sometimes for things that you messed up or things that were out of your control. And just understanding, like, you know, life happens and it doesn't always define you. It's the next day that defines you. And that comes into being there for one another. You know, like, what does that really mean? We all work with guys that we don't like. We all have guys that we could care less about. But, you know, when times get tough and shit hits the fan, we all need to remember that we all are a brotherhood and a familyhood. And while you may not go have a beer with that guy, or you may not go hang out with them off duty, you know, it says a lot when people reach out and are there. And, you know, I'll touch on one. You know, I had a motorcycle accident 11 days ago. I got hit and went down, and the guys transported me. And the battalion chief on scene, you could see when he figured out it was me, man, you could see the concern in his eyes. And he's a chief who I love, Chief Earlmeyer. You know, he busts my balls. We hang out, you know, off duty because our kids play baseball together. So he knows me very well, and he's hard on me. But you could see the actual concern in his eyes of, like, oh shit, this is one of our guys who went down. Like, hey man, you're going to the hospital. You know, Pickett, Captain Mott, they got on scene, realized it was me, like, hey man, we're going to the hospital. Like, you're going, like, we're not talking. Like, you could just sense that. And then, you know, our fire chief, Chief Jones, man, he was one of the first ones in the room and stayed with me all the way till I got discharged. And, you know, it said a lot about that. My captain was there. He's texting everybody in the department, making sure I'm okay. You know, it said a whole lot. And the guys that reached out, and guys and girls that reached out to me throughout my healing process, man, showed that, like, hey man, like, I ain't always the best person, but you know, there's still caring human beings around here who care and who are going to stand in your corner when things get tough. And that's all we can ask for, is that we are there for one another. We have to put our pride, our ego, and our emotions aside and remember everybody's human beings, man. And if we're not truly there for one another, then wearing this shirt doesn't mean shit. We can be operationally ready, but if we're not emotionally ready for everybody at times, and I get it, everybody's gonna have peaks and valleys, right? Some people might be more emotionally ready, but making sure somebody's at least checking up on a dude, making sure somebody's, you know, touching base with a guy, and that's where a good leader knows his people inside and out. I think that ties back to that leadership. Like, you know what makes your guys tick. You know when you guys aren't doing well. We do a pretty good job of that, I think. My current captain, man, he can tell when I'm not in a good spot. He can sense when I'm in a mood or something's bothering me. So I challenge all captains, leaders, anybody that's in a leadership role, dude, learn your people, because that's the most valuable tool you have, is your people. And if you don't know what makes them tick, and you can't figure out when they're off, and you hear all these line of duty deaths and suicides off duty and stuff, and you hear that, it's the same common theme comes up every time. It's And man, he seemed off, but I didn't want to challenge him on it. I didn't want to question him on it. And it's like, well, man, maybe if you would have questioned him, would he still be here? You know, and it's a hard burden to hold on to because none of us want to burden anybody. That's a problem in the fire service again, and our mental aspect. We're all tactical athletes. We're all paramilitary in a sense. We do not want to burden anybody with our problems. So your wellness does matter. So don't ever think you're burdening somebody. Get it out, because the more you harness it inside and harvest it, it's going to fester and it's going to be a big problem for you. So I challenge everybody, man, like get those outlets, get those counselors, get those people in your corner, leaders, follow up with your guys. Even if your guys get to a point where they're pissed off at you because you're bothering them, like none of us want silence. We all want everybody to kind of notice when something's going wrong with us, man.
Well said for sure. I think people needed to hear that. And yeah, that's what truly being there for one another means for sure. Matt, man, I appreciate you doing part two. Definitely some things were said that hopefully I think others can listen, reflect on. Am I that person he's talking about? Am I doing this? Can I be better for my crew, for my family, whatever the case may be? I just gotta say, I appreciate you, pal. Really do, for coming on and scheduling this. I'm glad that you're okay. You got some bumps and bruises, but you're still here with us, man, and you're still able to provide some real talk, real information on the fire service, man. So thank you.
And I appreciate what you're doing. Like it's been overwhelming with after I did my part one and how many people reached out to me, you know, and then and I just tell people, like, if something in the fire service you listen to, you read, and it makes you just rejuvenated or something, like send whoever wrote that, figure it out. Instagram them, Facebook them, email them, figure out who they are. And I got so many responses through Instagram and email and everything, like, dude, hey, excellent job. Excellent. Great. You know, hey, you touched on this, man. Cause that just keeps everything flowing. It makes all of us that do these things know, like, hey man, we're not speaking Greek, you know, everybody's starting to pick up on it. So giving everybody praise, you know, when I listen to your show every week, man, and I try to reach out to whoever does it, like, hey man, great job. Way to be part of the brotherhood now, a student of the game. Like we're our own little clique now, like guys that are on your show. Like, hey man, excellent job. I love when you touched on this and just giving them the same support that everybody gave me, man. So you keep doing what you're doing, man. I think what you're doing for the fire service is top notch, and everybody else out there that's doing podcasts and all the guys that are listening and taking time to listen and make yourself better, man. That's what's going to keep our fire service whole and still, you know, American made and all that. Like it's going to make us just be badass at what we do, both physically and mentally, you know. I thank it, but I got to give a quick shout out. So we just got a text message from one of our chief who said, you know, we got a new paramedic in the house. So I got to give a shout out to Miss Aubrey Anderson, who completed her paramedic. Congratulations to her. And then our guy River Davis, he'll be finishing his up in next month. So River, now you got some big shoes to fill. She passed her, so now we got to get you through yours. And then also shout out to my boy Walter Webb from Fry Fire and our chief Foster, both just completed their entire arson series. So now we have two new arson investigators. So in the last month of them getting it, I think they got like a week before we've had these string of fires. So them two dudes have been busy just getting their arson stuff done. So shout out to all the guys that are still benefiting and moving. If you're moving forward with anything in your career, trying to make yourself better, hey man, keep grinding, keep driving. You know, the certs do matter. The things you bring to the fire service, they matter. So don't ever give up on it.
And with that, I'm gonna end it at that. I appreciate you, Matt. It's been good conversation today.
Absolutely, man. Always a good time.
Always.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.